RadioInfluence.com.
Happy Friday afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with
Heatwave Val
and Beans. I'm leaving tomorrow to come up there.
Yeah, well, shit. Something just happened between my shoulder blades.
Oh my gosh.
I got a spasm now all of a sudden. I don't know what it is. Is it going to be, when you get here?
Sunday.
Okay, so you're going to miss Saturday at least.
Yeah.
Saturday is going to be real bad.
Call the masseuse that you've got in to fix your shoulder.
Nah, to hell with it.
Okay.
It'll work itself out. All right, so.
Listen.
It's Friday again.
It's Friday again, and lots to talk about today, of course. There's going to be a lot of stuff, you know, that's pretty in-depth investigative-wise and things over the coming days. There's a lot going on concurrently. And I have two topics that I really want to focus on today, Frank.
Let's do them.
Yeah, outside of the, you know, the culture aspect of the rally and what that all means and, you know, these leaks from the Democrats to what's his name? Jake Tapper, the supposed leaks saying, oh, the Democrats know that the president won this round. Like, I have a different take on all that we could talk about later. And we'll get started with Epstein. We'll cover some Epstein today because I just want to let everyone know for Uncover DC, I have a couple people working on stories for this. We're going to have stories coming out that are focusing on the background of this case, like the people, the connections. I'm just warning everyone, there won't be conspiracy land here, okay? Not theory, conspiracy. Like, I'm not going to print anything that I can't prove without a shadow of a doubt. So if there's a rumor out there that Jeffrey Epstein is Mossad and we can't prove it, I'm not printing it. And that doesn't mean that I'm not entertaining it in the background, but I had people angry with me for not talking about that stuff on some of the media that I did over the past couple of days, and I can't prove that. So I'm not going to talk about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, if you want to hear somebody talk about it, Steve Pasinik is talking about it. He put out a seven-minute video that will probably tell you everything you want to heard spoken about. I actually just watched it again before I got on the air tonight.
Well, I didn't watch his video. I saw it come across. I haven't watched it yet because I'm totally ridiculously swamped with other stuff. But Steve Pasinik has been reliable in the past. He's definitely definitely well connected. Some people like him, some people don't. Listen with, you know, the discernment that you have and see what he has to say. And there are gazillions of amazing independent researchers digging into all aspects of this right now. And there is good information to be found everywhere. And I will be covering this story in depth and in detail through its entirety from the perspective of covering the trial and the court case and then covering the background movement and the connections and the money players and all of that stuff with two other contributors that are working on stories about that. And it will be their thing. This is what they'll be dedicated to for the entirety of however long this lasts. So that you guys can go to Uncover DC and at least get stuff to supplement the things you're reading elsewhere. But it'll be a focus for us. So there was the bail hearing on Thursday, and I just read the whole entire opinion, and it is very, very, very solid. The judge goes over every different aspect of why pretrial detention is mandated, between the possible intimidation of victims to the ability for Jeffrey Epstein to flee, to his unexplained financial wealth, all of the danger he poses to the community, the fact that he tried to obstruct justice in the 2008 case, all of it is covered in detail inside of this opinion on why he will be detained until trial. I do want to mention, we're going to get off into conspiracy land a little bit today on the show because there's some really interesting stuff happening. But this would follow suit, sort of, in the R. Kelly case when the R. Kelly decision in Chicago came down. I thought to myself, okay, well, this bodes well for the judge detaining Epstein. And the victim spoke in court in the Epstein case, and both of the victims who spoke said that they fear for their safety, which I don't blame them. Do you, Frank?
No.
And they released some paperwork, some exhibits that accompanied the decision. And I had read through them. And they are basically, they're from Anna Villafana, who was the U.S. attorney down in Florida, who was also working on this case with Acosta, talking to Lefkowitz, who is one of Epstein's attorneys. And they're basically going back and forth trying to figure out the statutes they can use other than the ones that he's actually guilty of to slam him with something. And they're going back and forth. And I guess the attorney asks, hey, you know, which there's no email in. In other words, we don't see the email from the attorney to her asking about this, but this is what the reply is about draft agreements that they're working on. I'm going to read it in full because it made my stomach turn.
Okay.
It says, hi, Jay, who's the lawyer for Epstein. I was hoping there would be things for me to read this morning, but I'll try to remain patient. And I assume she's saying she was expecting something from him. I believe there are only two types of agreements that would apply to this case. One, a plea agreement to a federal charge or charges. And two, a non-prosecution agreement, which is really a deferred prosecution agreement because the defendant agrees that if he violates the agreement, the U.S. can prosecute him. A plea agreement is part of the court file. It's not accessible online via PACER, but someone can go to the clerk's office to obtain a copy. A non-prosecution agreement would not be made public or filed with the court, but it would remain part of our case file, and it probably would be subject to FOIA, but it's not something that we would distribute without compulsory process, meaning someone would have to sue to get it. On the obstruction charges, that which I believe is against the law, on the obstruction charges, many of the facts I included in that first proffer were hypothesized based on our discussions and the agent's observations of blank, redacted. We will need to interview her to confirm the accuracy of those facts. On a second count, we could rely on the incident where Mr. Epstein's private investigators followed redacted's father, forcing him off the road. Or if there's something more recent related to any redaction, we would consider that. Hope that helps. The reason why that's important is because the U.S. attorneys in Florida were trying to charge him instead of the actual crimes with obstruction of justice and intimidation. And that's one of the things that the judge in New York used just recently to say he was a danger to the public if he was released because he had tried witness intimidation in the past. And because he denied that in the current case, he denied that that was happening.
Okay.
The proof the judge was using to say, well, listen, we have emails between your attorneys and the U.S. government talking about how you did this and whether or not you'd use it as a bolster for your plea agreement or whatever. So this is why this exhibit was submitted with the bail memo, because the judge was using it to prove obstruction and why that's poignant in keeping him detained. However, what is overlooked in that, I think, is the disgusting way they're negotiating his charges based on how he can hide them from the public. So they're talking about what's accessible and what's not accessible and what's in public and what's not in public and what might be the best way to go based on that. And I just think that's gross.
Yeah.
And this is the government attorney. I mean, this is just disgusting.
Yeah. And have you been able to read outside of the, because I talked about the denying of bail last night a little bit and the reasons why, and I think that's all right and good. Have you been able to read what was inside of Vanity Fair and all that other stuff too?
Yes. And one of the angles, yes. So there's a couple different things going on here, and people are really starting to get nervous. First of all, we've got the release of documents incoming in this case, in the unrelated civil Jane Doe case, where the judge ruled that these documents should be released to the public. 2,000 of them. Vanity Fair and many others say that they, and the judge himself or herself says, will implicate many dignitaries, politicians, entertainers, all kinds of people will be implicated in this document release.
Yeah, I have this over here. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit will release approximately 2,000 pages of documents, likely over the next several days, which may reveal sex crimes committed by, quote, numerous prominent American politicians, powerful business executives, foreign presidents, a well-known prime minister, and other world leaders, end quote, according to the court's three-judge panel.
Yes, and everybody is really crapping their pants about that release, and we're waiting for it any day now. 2,000 pages of that people are going to be digging through, including myself, and I'm sure you, to figure out who it is that's implicated. You imagine what repercussions this will have on the public.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine what repercussions it's going to have on the next Grammy Awards?
The Grammy Awards, the elections.
The Oscars, the Tonys.
Every major let's pat ourselves on the back competition in the country will be affected by this. People's lives will be ruined when this information comes out in the court of public opinion. And who knows what charges may follow. It's huge. It's huge.
Now, that line right there is really earth-shaking.
What?
That right there, that line I just read.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If you have something to hide and were involved with these people, you are literally toast. You know, people, and I really think that Dershowitz may be exonerated when all this stuff comes out. I really do. He has been adamant and very, very, very forceful in his defense of his own character and that he wasn't involved in any of this, even though they keep trying to drag him into it. And he's in the middle of a lawsuit right now for defamation against this victim for saying she's lying. And I don't know why the victim would bring suit if she had known that there would be exculpatory evidence released in these documents, but we shall see. Additionally, very interesting. We talked about this at length. I think that I've been hinting at this a little bit, and I find it really telling that the charges against Kevin Spacey have been dropped.
Now, what do you think this is about? Because I've read very lightly that this is an example, and like you were talking about conspiracy land. I have nothing to back this up, what I'm about to say. Okay? There is nothing that I have.
Okay, go ahead.
I have been reading that this is an example of a guy pretty much trying to clean up and try to make things right at the end. Someone who's lived in these circles and has tried to give things up and make things right.
That could be.
And made some deals.
It could be. I just found it interesting that the civil case was dropped against him. And it appears, to be quite honest with you. Now, let me go in. I don't have anything to back this up either, other than the few facts I'm about to share with you. Okay. Kevin Spacey was charged with this crime. He comes out with the video that did we play the video on the show?
No, we didn't. But that video is part of the evidence that people are using. Like, you know what? Because it's odd. What is he doing? He's not reprising his role of Frank Underwood. House of Cards is done with. But he was about to embark on all this, the legal chapters and the legal fights in his life. And then all of a sudden, I don't know.
Should we play it? It's 3 minutes long. I mean, people might not have heard it, and playing it now in retrospect of what's just happened.
Well, people got to see it too, because now they're pointing out little things about the mug.
Yeah, well, yeah, that, yeah, the queen and the mug and what it represents, you know, and
who are they, like, is he tipping? Is he telling? Is that video more so for the people who he is saying, if I go down, I'm taking you with me? You know, what is this really? Who's he really talking to now?
So, look, what I want to say is this. This is like a theory that I'm poking around in my head. And I, again, this is loosely based on some things that I'm sure we'll get more. But the problem with this case that was brought against him, this criminal case, the reason why the case was dismissed is really uncommon. It's that there was a cell phone that contained supposed evidence on it from the victim, right? And it was one of the linchpins on the prosecution's case. And when the judge brought the witness up on the stand to talk about it and answer questions about it, he pled the fifth. Now, it came out that phone was tampered with and is now missing. So some of the things were edited. Some of the things were deleted. The mother deleted text messages. It all suddenly came out in court that this key piece of evidence was messed with by the people who were charging him with the crime. Right. The process by the victim. They edited the information. And the judge said there, we can't charge this man when the evidence you use to bring these charges is now tampered with, defunct and missing. And they let him go, which leads me to believe or think or ponder or speculate that these charges on Kevin Spacey may not have been real at all. That maybe Kevin Spacey was talking before, and they found out and manufactured this against him. And then listening to the video in retrospect of that, it just makes more sense. Now, again, that is complete and total speculation on my part. I'm just trying to put these pieces together in this really odd story. And there is not even any evidence out there to suggest that he's tied to Epstein other than he flew on the planes or that he had anything to do with this or what was going on behind the scenes. No evidence to support it. It's just the timing of it all is just so odd.
Is he another one that just used the plane for like a little in-country tag-along ride, or did he go to the island?
Clinton, 26 trips aboard, traveling with traveling with fellow passengers. Africa. He went to Africa.
Africa.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I don't know.
On that trip to Africa, on the manifest from that day, I do know there were younger women. But Kevin Spacey is gay.
Yeah, I know. That's his defense in all this.
Yeah. I mean, no one never knew he was gay. And then all of a sudden he was gay. You know what I mean?
Oh, by the way, did I ever tell you guys that I'm gay?
I know. After all these years and everything, I just all of a sudden decided I would let everybody know that I'm gay.
You know what? The timing is right. The time is finally right.
The time was him being accused of being a pedophile.
Yeah, that was the best. That was the craziest thing. I was like, oh, my God, why would you do this?
People thought, like, you know, people said he was trying to get in front of the pedophilia charges by announcing he was gay as some sort of like a sympathy card.
Yeah, well, I mean, was he facing any kind of accusations from anybody younger than 15, though?
Yes.
Okay, so he was there.
Spacey?
Spacey.
Oh, no. Not that I know of, no.
Because, you know, first of all, pedophilia, we're talking, what is that? Ages?
Under the age of consent.
No, no.
Let me see.
No, if you actually want to, get technical with this, pedophilia, it's an age range. I think if you go to early teenhood, that's called hebephilia. Let me see, hold on. Hebephilia is a sexual preference for early adolescent children, those roughly ages 11 to 14.
And pedophilia is under 11?
Pedophilia is pedophilia.
It says in court they reference it differently.
Well, they might be able to. But I think pedophilia is really, really young. Like you're going down to like, I think toddlers and stuff.
It's gross.
Oh, yeah. No, it's awful. But you want to know something? When I talk about 15, 16-year-old, you know, children, high school age kids, whatever, if we're going to talk about the reasons why he might have brought up the, by the way, I'm gay thing, you remember when Milo got into a lot of trouble?
Yep.
Talking about how it's very common, you know, growing up, realizing you're gay or something like that for young boys to seek out relationships with older men and, you know, around 15, 16, that high school age and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he got a lot of crap for that.
Yep.
Because he was presenting it as a almost like a linchpin within that culture. Maybe that's the angle that Spacey was working in some way with his little coming out that, hey, you know what? I live as a gay man and, you know, these are just the relationships that are struck up. I don't know. It would never. I don't know. Maybe that's what it was, trying to make sense of it all these 2 years later now.
I think we still are going to learn more as days go on for sure.
Absolutely.
Another thing that a lot of people have been talking about in the Epstein case is this Wexner connection. And Wexner was the owner of Victoria's Secret and also the owner of the property where Jeffrey Epstein lives in New York City, who then gifted the property over to Epstein from what we're learning. And there have been reports on this previously. I think he passed away in a suicide attempt or a suicide, if I'm not mistaken.
Wexler?
Yeah.
He's dead already?
This is what the story that my correspondent is working on, and I just read a draft of it, so just bear with me. Les Wexner.
Yeah, this guy everything I've been learning about him is seems like he is pretty much Epstein's sugar daddy.
Someone died close to him. Someone died. There's someone someone passed away. Scratch that from the record. Scratch what I just said from the record. I need to wait a little bit and get all this into my head and process it before I start talking about it like an idiot. But the reason why I mentioned Wexner is because there was a blind item put out 3 days ago, which I missed until just now, that I sent to you in our little chat, Frank. Did you see this one?
From Enti?
Yeah.
What does it say again?
It's long. I'm going to read it, though, because, wow.
Let people know who Enti Lawyer is.
Enti Lawyer is an entertainment lawyer who publishes things like of this nature, tidbits, some of them less impactful than this, some of them more impactful than this, and has been on top of all of Hollywood and all of like political world, and all of the inside gossip comes to Enty. And then Enty will create these things called blind items, which he hosts on his website. And he doesn't tell you who any of the people are involved until later on when either people guess or they he releases the blind item responses. So this was a blind item, which means that it's like a huge puzzle that you have to try to figure out with what they give you. So it's going to be confusing, but it tells you a lot about the development of the properties in that area and what they could have possibly been used for. And it comes to Enty today from a group who are not him, but sent him this to publish. Okay. And it says the following. Where is it? Here we go. All right. Deep breaths. Deep breaths. We wish to remain in the shadows. None of us are famous or would be known to the general population, nor do we want to be. We offer a little backstory on East 71st Street. Lot is now known, but some has slipped right on by. East 71st Street is Epstein's property. Mm-hmm. When our little club was younger, living full-time in New York, a member worked for the Retail King in the late 80s, early 90s, and we now think the Retail King is Wexner, okay? RK, Retail King's, empire was coming into its heyday. He had impressive flagships and decent product back then. When RK purchased on 71st Street, he had a huge apartment in a condo building with Central Park views. Club member mentioned that the condo had like 13 bathrooms. The blueprint had come across their desk one day, which means one of the club members is an architect or a contractor. Also, RK had a big project starting on 71st Street. It was going to take a couple years. Another topic of interest was RK's supposed close friendship with a Hollywood movie star, an actor that had great success in the 60s and 70s. The actor worked heavily in the 80s, had a major role in a much-watched TV miniseries. Everyone's mother was in love with him. Think about who that could be. There's a few people that come to mind. He has always, quote, worked and still does to this day. Back then, it seemed like the actor lived at RK's when he was in New York City, which was a lot. So much so that Page Six was starting to hint about his presence. There were a couple of blind items, too. While the actor is out of the closet now, he was not then. So it's a famous actor from the 60s and 70s who worked a lot in the 80s, was on a TV miniseries, and then came out as gay at some point recently.
Who's that?
I don't know. Was Kevin Spacey on a miniseries?
Well, that's the only thing, the miniseries part.
It's not him, I don't think.
But recently came out?
Well, it doesn't say recently. But it says, while the actor is out of the closet now, he was not then. So that means back in the 80s and 90s, he wasn't, and now he is.
Well, who knows?
We're going to have to think on that one.
Yeah. And of course, I think that The Weeknd is going to bring us great revelation.
I agree. At the same time, another member of our little club had a very well-fixed grandmother. She had an incredible apartment in one of the co-ops you can't buy your way into. And after the member's parents moved to the country, they moved in with the grandmother. We all wanted to move in, and in some respects, we did. So that means one of the members had parents who were foreigners. Club member's grandmother always had incredible gossip, food, cocktails, and friends. Her and her crowd loved having the, quote, younger set around, as she referred to us. So this is a very old socialite or an older socialite, rich, rich, rich woman who is well-connected and has these young kids or young adults, maybe in their 20s or teens, in the house all the time. And they like hanging out together because it's, you know, whatever. The club called the grandmother Vera because she reminded everyone of Vera Charles in Auntie Mom or Mame. Mommy, I don't know. Over the years, we learned far more about what was really going on in New York City at Vera's than the papers ever printed. And not long after we settled into her social circle, the renovations on 71st Street started, and so did the fighting. Lots of demands about not wanting public disclosure of the details, major disagreements with the planning commission and code officials. There were digging requests like the ones you hear about going on in London today. I don't know about that. It was a constant uproar. The technology RK was putting in had never been seen before. It was causing serious issues with the neighbors, the city, historical committees, and Con Ed, because that building is historical. Lots of legal going back and forth. Every now and then, tidbits would make the papers, but a lot the club got to hear at Vera's did not. Overlapping with the renovation on 71st were two other major renovations across the street. They were at different stages of completion. These neighbors were spending at the same level as RK and were more high profile. They just didn't have as much square footage. We'll come back to them in a bit. One day, two of the club members were on their way to Vera's and decided to go down 71st Street to check on the progress. It was in full swing. About the time they're in front admiring the place, this nice-looking guy in his 30s comes out. He had plans rolled up under his arm, and before the club members knew it, he strikes up a conversation, starts talking about the home and its history. That's when it came out that number 9, which is another property, was going to be the main residence, but number 11 next door was being redone for guests and staff. He then turned to the club members and said, "Would you like a tour?" The place was about 70% done, but there was no question it was going to be incredible. Number 11 was just as beautiful as number 9. The homes were not being combined, but completed as two separate residences. Not long after, Retail King announced he was getting married. It was an unexpected turn of events. The club's theory was shredded. We had wagered that 71st Street was going to be for RK's mother and sister. We had to shift our hypothesis to 71st Street being part of RK's family plan, and he would keep the condo for his other life. No one ever saw property 9 or 11 come out of RK's portfolio. The interior being put in was clearly for entertaining and elegant home living. It was going to be a perfect wedding gift from an older husband to a very young but refined wife. Fast forward a few years when it was reported in the late 90s that Retail King purchased New Media King's old apartment on 5th. Now, this is going to take some digging, right? New Media King was moving to a larger apartment in the same building. While RK spent some major bank and time redoing New Media King's old apartment, we saw no movement at 71st. This is where it gets weird. That brings us to Creature. This is his nickname. We had only seen him.
Ooh, Epstein's nickname?
We don't know. We can make guesses as we go along.
And just say RK is Wexler.
Yeah, we think it's Wexner, yes.
Wexner or Wexler?
Wexner.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay, Wexner.
Yeah.
And then New Media King?
New Media King was somebody who was a New Media King back in, goodness, in the late 90s.
All right, okay, keep going, keep going.
So I don't know who bought a huge media empire in the 90s.
I don't know.
We're going to have to figure that out. Okay, that brings us.
Usually the comments are full of people that have really good guesses.
Yeah, we'll go down there in a minute. Yeah. Okay. In the group were Date, club member one. That brings us to Creature. We've only seen him once in person in the late 90s at a political cocktail party held in a very wealthy donor's apartment. 60 or so people were in attendance, with the CNC being the focal point. I don't know what that means. In the group were Date, new nickname, club member, plus one, all nicknames. Plus one asked if Date knew Creature at 3 o'clock, and Date said he did. Now, this is a clue. I don't know. Plus one looked at the club member and asked if they knew Creature. They did not. Club member was told by plus one to remember Creature. He would tell them why later. If RK was there, club member didn't see him. The rest of the room is what you would expect for such an event, a scene right out of the, quote, bonfire of the vanities. Afterwards, the three went to dinner. Once the drinks were in hand, club member asked what the fuss was about regarding Creature. Creature's problems were explained in blunt terms. In this discussion, neither RK or where Creature hung his hat came up. However, the royal's friendship with Creature and Creature's heiress companion did. So Creature is dating some heiress, and the royal and Creature weren't in attendance, or the royal and the heiress weren't in attendance that night. I'm thinking Prince, what's his name?
Andrew?
Yeah. The first question club member asked, if what Date and plus one had said was true, why would the royal be friends with Creature, and why would Creature be allowed in the room with the CNC? The reply club member got was, really? Okay. As we moved toward the new millennial, the club's interest changed. RK occasionally came up. The only shift the club saw was number 11 coming on the market. It was not long after New Media King's apartment came into RK's portfolio. Some time passed before Creature's problems came to a head in PB. I don't know what this is.
Peanut butter.
The heiress friendship with the Creature started making perfect sense as Creature was exposed. Heiress had been at the... Maxwell?
Could be.
Eris had been at the center of British society in the late 80s. Creature had financially rescued her after the father's demise. Yeah, it has to be. Eris was also good friends with Royal. When the press started covering Creature's New York home, it clicked. The club was like, wait, that's RK's house. Let's go back to Neighbors on East 71st Street. You see how long this is?
Yes.
The disgrace, the townhouse across the street on the even numbered side of 71st, one door in from Madison, is number 18. It belongs to a very famous beloved comedian and actor who's had a spectacular fall from grace. He sits in jail right now for what else? Being a serial rapist. The disgraced, was Kevin Spacey a comedian ever? No, not him.
Not in a stand-up sense. He's comedic roles, though.
The disgraced comedian, actor, and his wife, not him, spent a fortune renovating. Like RK's townhouse, it had the latest must-have feature of the day, heated sidewalks. CA was at one time trying to mortgage the house to pay off his mounting legal bills. Who is a comedian sitting in jail right now for being a serial rapist?
Comedian sitting in jail for serial rapist. I don't... What?
Mm-hmm.
Get to those comments. They know. The commenters know.
Creature, Epstein, Retail King, Les Wexner. I see Wexner. They're saying Wexler. Eris, Maxwell. Oh, comedic actor, Cosby.
Okay. Yeah.
There is also another interesting resident who lives on the even side of 71st, directly across from 9 and 11. The impressive home shares its west wall with the back of the Frick, which is an art gallery, number 14. It belongs to a billionaire businessman and his socialite wife. The husband is famous for the jet set empire he founded and later got pushed out of. While the home is not as large as number 9, it is similar and has heated sidewalks along with serious security. Some may know the billionaire couple more for their daughters' high-profile marriages. It's the daughters, their spouses, and the coming-of-age grandkids that keep their name in the papers. It's almost over. The youngest daughter married and divorced the son of a famous socialite clothing designer. The clothing designer's second husband is a billionaire himself. There have been horrible whispers about billionaire second husband for decades. The talk gives Creature a run for his money in the evil department. The club has often wondered if billionaire second husband uses his extraordinary SY as a substitute for an island. There are all sorts of common denominators between Creature and the billionaire's neighbor's extended family. You just need to step back and look.
All right. So is Creature Epstein?
That's what everybody seems to.
Well, if you think about the Creature... You're talking about something that was created. You're talking about this being. It doesn't really have an origin. I mean, he's just so odd. The one thing that I've been able to see this, or the one thing I'm taking note of, whenever I go and I visit those multitudes of people out there doing investigative work or asking questions and pulling information together, like you had suggested people do in the beginning of the episode today. No matter what angle people are coming from and what they are trying to posit out there as a reason for all this being, the one thing that I am seeing as overlap is that this guy, Epstein, no matter who is controlling him, he was definitely picked up as being a really good prototype of a person to go and slip into this role as a guy who, socialite, honeypot, kind of a handler type, because of his personality, because of his social standing. All he needed was a little bit of help, a little bit of bankrolling, and a little bit of access before his personality can take over to do the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see Epstein being, Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
The whole thing here is the question we have to ask is, who's Dr. Frankenstein?
Yeah, there's someone pulling the strings, right?
Or a few people, yeah. Or an organization. We don't know. But he's definitely just like Keith Rainier. These are creations.
They're
these
peripheral
people.
Players and yeah. Creations. Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. To finish up this topic, because we'll go to the next one, just to say is that we have seen over the past 18 to 24 months several cases that look to be independent going through the court systems here and arrests being made and all kinds of stuff. And we've been stressing patience the entire time. And we've seen huge huge trafficking networks and pornographic networks and pedophilia networks being rolled up with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of defendants. I mean, and people are saying, you know, oh my gosh, this is great, but what about so-and-so? And what? And I mean, we've all stressed, you got to get them from the bottom so you can roll it up to the top. And I think that we're getting to the top now. And it's clear these things are being prosecuted. So whether or not they take the final step to tie it all up in a bow and really get the people behind this, the powerful, powerful people that, you know, the power brokers, so to speak, remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. Or they're all going to be, are these people all going to be these, you know, peripheral players who get banged for doing their role, but the bigger fish don't fry?
And that would be the awful, awful, awful thing here.
If that happened.
If that happened.
Yeah.
But from like with the opening of this segment and what we see and hear, if Vanity Fair is what is the outlet that is putting all this out there, knowing the way that they lean.
Yeah.
If Vanity Fair is the one that's saying, hey, everybody, duck and cover.
Vanity Fair is a magazine for the, quote, elites. It really is. This show, Frank, is brought to you by our favorite food company. I don't want to call them a food company. They're our favorite healthy option for dinner.
Nutrition dealers.
Nutrition. Sunbasket. Sunbasket. No matter what you guys like to eat, Sunbasket makes it easy. And Frank can attest to that.
Absolutely. Very easy, very consistent, and very quick.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I have to, as soon as I get back, Sunbasket is, I paused it for a little bit because that's one of the things that you could do. So I paused it and I'm going to bring it back in. They have different meal choices, different menus. You can choose from paleo, carb conscious, gluten free, Mediterranean, diabetes friendly, and vegan meal plans. Whatever you guys are into, choose from 18 weekly recipes. Everything you need to know to eat clean and healthy is right there for you. So put your meal planning on autopilot with this special offer. You guys can go to sunbasket.com/darktolight and get up to $60 off. And that's sunbasket.com/darktolight to learn more about the limited time $60 off special. They have 5-minute salad mixes you can make for lunch. You can actually, you get in there, quick and easy recipes. Oh, organic produce, clean ingredients. You can make your dinner in 15 minutes. There are some, what's your favorite recipe from this week? Because you eat it every week.
Actually, I skipped this week because Lauren is, Lauren has to, she's got a lot of things going on elsewhere. Mm. So we've actually not even been in the same house for most of the week. So we say, you know what? Yeah, let's just keep it easy this week and all that stuff. So I've just been making a lot of tuna, a lot of omelets, things like that. But their salads, like you said, are great. I think the favorite thing that I've had out of them in the last 2 months were these battered fish tacos. It's awesome because then they sent over this really spicy kind of like mayonnaise tartar sauce stuff. It's very spicy. It's awesome. So good. But that's just it. And like you said, very quick. I think on average, like 25 minute preparation times. That's an average, sometimes a little bit longer, but really good stuff. And anybody that's looking for ease in their diets and a good way to end the day nutritionally, this is a good pick.
Yeah. So you guys can head right over to sunbasket.com/darktolight. And again, figure out how you can get your $60 discount for Sunbasket. And support our sponsors, guys, because they support the show and it's important. So thank you.
Thank you.
Shifting gears completely and totally from the seedy, disgusting underground world of pedophilia to the seedy, disgusting underground world of government corruption. We take a look at the Flynn case and what's ongoing. Now, you told me you don't have really any idea what's happening here, right?
Oh, no. I'm listening to other people on this stuff. I'm listening to everybody else and just being quiet.
Okay. I retweeted an article from Margot Cleveland yesterday. It was a long read, but it explained everything from start to finish. And in a very, very well done way. I will put it in the description in the show notes for you guys so you can read it. But I will go over it for you and try to explain what's happening. Got to take a deep breath on this one because it's freaking confusing. All right.
Great.
So Flynn had attorneys working with him from Covington and Burley, I believe the law firm name is. They were Clinton-connected attorneys. Everybody was sort of like scratching their head. Why in the hell would he bring these people on board, right? When he was arrested and he pled guilty, in his plea deal, he pled guilty to lying about his conversations with Kislyak, even though we know now he didn't lie about them. But just put that aside, okay? He pled guilty to that. Interspersed within his plea deal was talk about Turkey and lobbying that he did in Turkey, et cetera, so on and so forth. And I'm not going to talk about the names of these companies. I'm just going to tell you the story like I'd be trying to explain it to someone without going into ridiculous detail. But Flynn had a company called Flynn Intel Group, and he formed it in 2016. Flynn Intel Group had partners. One of the partners is the gentleman who's on trial now, and the trial's ongoing in you know, a criminal trial about FARA violations, etc. That partner in that in Flynn Intel Group started a company in Egypt, I believe, that was doing work for a client in Turkey. And Flynn was doing work for the client that the partner created. And from all that's been available lately, didn't know that client, and they're trying to prove that client was working on the behest of Turkey right now. That's what they're doing in this trial. Didn't know that the partner's company was working for a foreign government. So Flynn Intel Group is doing work for this other company. They don't know that other company is being financed by a foreign government. And so that's where this whole FARA thing comes into play for Flynn and the Turkey stuff. He wrote an op-ed where, you know, he basically, it was all about Gulen and trying to get him to step. It was a big, are you following me so far?
So far.
Okay, it's complicated. It's really complicated. So the attorneys, during the course of the plea, you know, the plea deal and everything, the government comes to Flynn and says, look, we want to charge your business partner and his, and, you know, the other gentleman that was working with you guys with a criminal violation of these statutes. And we'd like for you to cooperate with us as we try to do that. And Flynn said, of course, I will cooperate with you. And that's why the sentencing has been subsequently pushed back over time in the Flynn case, because he's been cooperating in this other case, spending dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of hours cooperating with the government to try and help them in the other case. Now, at the same time as this law firm is representing Flynn in the special counsel lying case, they're also representing Flynn in the other case with the company that did the work for Turkey. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
So he retained attorneys that represented him in both cases. In the case where he's cooperating with the government, where the government is trying to prosecute his former business partner for cooperation with the foreign government without registering FARA and some other charges.
Okay.
At the same time, that same law firm is representing him in the special counsel investigation.
All right.
Okay?
Yep.
So it comes time for Flynn to sign a retroactive FARA agreement where he declares that he's been working, this is where it gets confusing. He puts things in the FARA application that gets approved, and he talks to his attorneys, Covington and Burley or whatever, and he talks to them and he says, here's what happened. This is how it all went down. And they fill out the FARA. They're experts on it, supposedly. He pays them hundreds of thousands of dollars. They fill out the form. The government accepts the form and grants it. Then it's getting to be time for Flynn to take the stand for the government in the Turkey case against his former business partner. And the government wants him to say that he knowingly provided false information in the FARA to the government, even though he didn't. So they're trying to say you lied on this FARA application, even though it was with the government that they were putting the FARA application together in the first place.
So then was this somebody on the inside of the government that was modified?
Yes.
Is this FARA application the exact same kind of application that if I needed to fill one of these out, would mine look exactly like his, or was something done to it to almost make it be like a booby trap?
It was it's appearing to be now, as more information comes out, that it was a booby trap. And here's where the case gets disgustingly nauseating, okay? So Flynn fires his attorney suddenly and brings in Sidney Powell. Sidney Powell gets in there and says, you know what, I need a clearance because there's evidence here that's exculpatory that the government has held from us. In addition to that, she's representing him in the other case as well, and says Flynn is saying the government's asking Flynn to testify under oath that he lied knowingly in the FARA application. Flynn is saying, I didn't do that. I didn't knowingly lie. I told everybody what I thought was the truth, and they put it in the FARA, and then they added things or changed things, whatever they did, to make it what the government's trying to put forth. And again, this was crafted under the observation of the government. So they were watching this whole time.
Do we know yet what part of the FARA application is in question?
Yes.
As far as inconsistency goes?
We do. And to be quite honest, I'm not going to get into the details of that with this conversation because your head will explode. It is so complicated. I'm just trying to give the background, but we do.
Okay.
So basically, Sidney Powell says, my client will not be lying under oath for you. And the government flips its shit. Excuse my French. And says, what are you talking about? You're not going to say this. And Sidney Powell says, look, here's the transcripts of the conversation. Here's the notes with the other attorneys. Flynn didn't lie about this stuff. He believed this stuff was true, which is a key component in charging on FARA violations, just so you know. If you don't know that something that you're putting, like if you don't know that some other company is working on behalf of another government and think they're working on behalf of, you know, whoever, you can't be charged with the FARA violation.
So it's not like statutory rape where you can't say, I didn't know she was 17.
Right.
Okay. You can actually, you know, if you were truly ignorant to what was going on there, you don't take the fall just because you got looped in.
Precisely.
Okay. That's pretty interesting.
So, yeah. So now what does the government do? Basically threatens Sidney Powell. The government goes to court and says, as a matter of fact, instead of making Flynn a cooperating witness, as we have glowingly spoken of him this entire time, saying that we knew he wasn't involved in the conspiracy in court documents, this is said, right? The government has admitted in court documents Flynn was unaware. He was not a part of the conspiracy. All of a sudden, the government says he's an unindicted co-conspirator. He did know, and he was a part of the conspiracy. And the judge says, hold on a second. Hold the boat, right? You can't just change your mind about this after everything we've been through so far. So there's a big hubbub here. Now, the Judge Sullivan in the other case is paying keen and close attention to all of this. Because as you know, from that December hearing, there has been some craziness going on about his plea, whether he wants to withdraw it, all kinds of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So this case is moving on. There's word that FBI agents contacted Michael Flynn Jr. and attempted, because Michael Flynn Jr. was also working with his father in the business, attempted to intimidate him, ask him all kinds of questions. Michael Flynn Jr. has counsel, okay? Michael Flynn Jr. says over and over, don't talk to me, talk to my attorney, stop coming to me directly, I won't speak to you. And they basically harass the dude until they finally give up. Then they file a document that they're going to call him as a witness, right? This was filed, doesn't say the date. This was filed and they designate his son as a material government witness because now they can't get Flynn. So they need to get his son to cooperate. You know, his son's not been involved in this the entire time, but all of a sudden here's Mike Flynn Jr. And then what Margot Cleveland is saying, if I'm understanding it correctly today, is that Flynn Jr., the prosecutors today wrapped up the case against the business partner. They called all their witnesses, right? And Flynn Jr. was not called as a witness, which means that was an intimidation tactic to try and get Flynn to flip on his position and admit he lied to something he didn't lie about so that they could get him as a witness on the stand so they could do something with their case. And
so they tried to twist his arm by threatening to call
his
Flynn Jr. in. And but obviously he had nothing to do with anything, because if he did, he would have been a key witness.
Mm-hmm. In addition, there's one other.
Well, what was the justification for even bringing Michael Flynn Jr. into it in the first place? If he was so far removed from the entire business itself,
like, he wasn't. What? He was the chief. He had a high position in the business.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Flynn was a partner in the business, like at a high level. He wasn't just a peripheral guy, like, or an employee. He was a high level guy. But clearly, through all the digging and nonsense that's been going on here, there's never been anything against him. So here's the thing. There's a lot more here, okay? There's transcripts that Technofog released from the other day about, you know, things that the government says they have that were never given to the defendants. And the defendants in that case, in the Turkey case, you know, causing a shit fit, saying, why aren't you giving us exculpatory evidence or anything that you... They have to give that stuff over to the defense. They're not allowed to hold evidence to themselves and then bring it out in court one day without the defense having it to prepare their case. It's against the rules. The government's just pulling a whole bunch of bull. In addition, there's one other facet of this case that's starting to really percolate. And thank goodness for percolate. And thank goodness for Sidney Powell, because she's come in here like a bulldog, okay? There is a conflict of interest now, a severe conflict of interest with these attorneys who represented Flynn in both cases because of this whole Farrah nonsense. And the judge, Sullivan, in the other case, the special counsel case, is bringing in the former attorneys, because not only are they implicated in conflict of interest, but they're holding back information from Sidney Powell. So they're not releasing the entire case file over to her. So there's a lot of shenanigans going on here, a lot. And Judge Sullivan said, there's no way that you are going to hold these records from this person, you know, from Sidney Powell, the new counsel. There are laws on the books that say you need to hand this stuff over in a timely manner. And so now the judge is bringing an ethics advisor for the bar in to sit there, the senior ethics guy, I believe, to sit there in the middle of this hearing while the judge tries to figure out why it is that these attorneys are breaking ethics by holding back information from the new attorneys of their former client.
Jeez.
So that's the Flynn case in a nutshell, a very big nutshell that, like seriously, if you're interested in this, I really should do a video on it. You really should read the Cleveland article. That'll really give you a heads up. And go to, I'll put Technofog, who's amazing at this stuff, in the show notes too.
I feel bad for this man.
He's a decorated military veteran of the highest order who has been destroyed all because he didn't agree with Obama's freaking policy in Iran. He was and God knows what else he knows at this point.
Oh, man. I can't imagine living that, having to try to figure it out and listen to it just to try to figure out what's going on in somebody else's life that was a burden.
It's complicated. And I'm sure I mean, I'm going to put a disclaimer out there. I am pretty sure that I got that all right. But there's a possibility that some of it is just a skewed, just a teeny bit. I doubt it, but it's a lot of data to hold inside your head and then just spit out in the right order.
You know, I still don't even have a clear understanding or a clear remembering, I guess, because, you know, the other thing is, too, with the news cycle and the way it is and where this all pivots and how these things develop, it's almost like reading a book. The book is fresh in your head once you're done with it. A year goes by and, you know, you used to be really good on all the details and then you forget. and when it comes to Flynn, you started the whole thing off talking about how, you know, it's one of those weird facts about this whole thing is that he pled guilty to lying about the circumstances surrounding his conversation with Kislyak. But then we found out he wasn't lying. How did we find out that he was not lying about what he had pled guilty to doing?
The 302s in the case. The FBI 302s of the agents that interviewed him, one was struck, were released as exculpatory evidence. And they say in there that they didn't feel he was lying about his conversation.
So then the bigger question from there is, what does that imply? That he was not lying about something that he eventually pled guilty to. What is the strategy or and the decision making behind then pleading guilty then?
One of the things that I've always pondered, like as a very like surface level reason, is look what they're doing to his family. And I think that there's an intimidation factor here. Flynn didn't know what was going on in his business because he was busy campaigning. And because his business ran amok and he didn't know what was going on, they probably held horrible, you know, treason or FISA or FARA violations against him. Not only that, but we're going to learn very soon that there was a FISA on Flynn for sure. And that's how they knew all of this stuff before. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of charges that.
So then it wasn't just incidental?
No. We're going to learn there was a FISA on Flynn at the same time. And if you remember, what's his name? Reince Priebus and others asked Jim Comey if there was a FISA on Flynn way back in the day when the Comey memos came out. We learned that. And, you know,
he said no.
He didn't answer.
He did not answer.
Nope.
And you know, talking about FISA and all that stuff, the reasons for applying for surveillance warrants, I wonder what the reason to get one on Michael Flynn was. If they had, we saw the hoops they had to jump through and all the nonsense they had to create just to get one on Carter Page.
Look, the Halper case, the Halper thing comes into play immediately. Remember, he was at that dinner with Stefan Halper overseas and that woman that we played on the show.
Yeah,
that's back in 2015. And I think that's one of the major reasons why they were able to go to the court for a FISA application. They tried to make it like he was co-opted or honeypotted or whatever, was working on behalf of the Soviet government because of a fake story that was made up about his relationship to Svetlana.
Makes sense.
Yeah. The other thing is, we'll end with this. What you were just saying about the book is so true, because I will tell you, with preparing for Mueller to come up and maybe testify next week on the 24th, I've been working on, you know, a bunch of different reports on what questions and what questions won't he answer and what questions will he answer and all kinds of stuff. And it took me a good minute or 10 or 15 sitting in front of the computer trying to remember all the intricate details of this, because it hasn't been at the forefront for a really long time in a news broadcast sense. You know, a lot of other things kind of took over the media and Spygate kind of shirked back because there's no freaking leaks coming out of that investigation. Just saying. So Spygate kind of took a back seat while they're doing all this investigation or waiting on the FISA stuff. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to get back into this and refresh my memory on all this stuff, because I remembered some stuff. And then as I was writing, it started coming out. But It really, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I consider myself very well versed in this topic, and I'm having a hard time remembering some of this stuff.
Yeah, no, it gets very, very sticky. But review, that's why you got to review. It's a task, but it's really, really gratifying when you can put it all together and understand at some point.
Yeah, it is. It's like closing a chapter on a book, or like at least, you know, solidifying facts in the book that you're not getting from many people. You're not hearing the story from many people. And, you know, I decided like I'm so sick and tired again of assigning any value to anything people in the legacy media say about anything anymore. It's all like mixed up nonsense, magical nonsense that doesn't have to do with any. I mean, it's really ridiculous. We need to stop giving them any power. We need to. Enough is enough. Anyway.
Enough.
You have been listening to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Heatwave Val
and Almost in a Heatwave Beans. You can hear the Dark to Light podcast on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, and RadioInfluence.com. Don't forget to check out our sponsor, Sunbasket, sunbasket.com/darktolight, and get your $60 off. And we will see you on Monday.
Indeed you will.
Bye.
Radio Influence strives to bring you excellence in podcasting. We work with personalities like TV chef Brian Duffy, radio personalities like Ian Beckles, news and political pundits like independent journalists Frank and Tracy Beans, experts from the sports world like veteran football scout and coach Chris Landry, pro wrestling personality David Penzer, MMA experts Jason Floyd and Daniel Galvan, and strength and conditioning coach Jeff Crochelle. If you're looking for food, sports, music, entertainment, politics, no matter the topic, Radio Influence has something for everyone. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.